Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. The Broward Sheriff's Office is investigating a video that went viral a week ago. It shows 15-year-old DeLuca Roll being pepper sprayed and then slammed into the ground by a sheriff's deputy. The incident sparked outrage online. Santina Roll is the 15-year-old's mother. She was interviewed this week on NBC6.
As a parent, it hurt. It hurt when the officers take my child head and he lick it down like he was nothing. He was a nobody. That's what really, like, that's somebody I bring in the world.
Clintina Roll is the teenager's mother. I apologize. The two deputies involved in this case have been suspended with pay during an internal investigation. BSO Sheriff Gregory Tony told WLRN he's made the incident a priority for the agency's internal affairs department.
This is something that's been fueling and fueling. And the last thing I want to see is, you know, the young population or community think that this is being ignored.
This has dominated social media this week in South Florida, dominated conversations in real life, for that matter, as well. And you can join the conversation here on the South Florida Roundup as we begin this week. What are your thoughts on law enforcement's response to incidents like this? Did you see this viral video? Have you seen the reaction by the Broward Sheriff's Office and prosecutors, for that matter? 800-743-WLRN is the telephone number. That's our voice line if you want to join the conversation. 800-743-9576. You can also send us a text as well. 786-786-7636 is our text line. Just please text us your first name and where you are texting from in South Florida. Again, the text line 786-786-7636. WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swatowski is with us here in studio, and NBC6 anchor Juan Strader is along with us from the NBC6 studios here in South Florida. Katie, let me start with you. What's the status of these BSO deputies? As you mentioned, suspended, but what does that mean?
They went from on restricted administrative duty to suspended from duty altogether right now, but still with pay. And I actually get to speak with Sheriff Gregory Tony last night about the status of this investigation. And he was saying, you know, it's moving along as it's supposed to. The three things they're looking at include the cell phone video that's gone viral. We've all probably seen it at this point, but the body camera footage. And they're also doing a lot of witness interviews and trying to get business witnesses and student witnesses.
It happened in a McDonald's parking lot
in
Tamarack.
Very close to J.P. Terravella High School in Coral Springs.
Juan, let me ask you. You spoke with the teenager, his mom, and their attorney. What did DeLuca's mom tell you about when she first saw her son after this incident?
Well, Tom, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. Katie, good afternoon to you as well. Good Friday to the both of you. When speaking to Clintina, she was, of course, outraged by what she saw. She said when she saw the video, she had to, first of all, pull over her car because she was, I believe, on her way to go pick up her son. And so when she saw her son, she saw his face and his nose was swollen. And then when she took him to the doctor, they pretty much told her that her son's nose is fractured and he had head injuries as well. But what is being left out of this whole talk and this conversation here is about what those deputies, what the deputy and the sergeant apparently wrote in their report. Because according to Clintina, she said that she was told by one of them that her son was at the hospital at the time before he was about to be taken to juvenile detention. And she was told that he had struck the gentleman's partner. And so he was pretty much upset with her. He had raised her voice and everything else. Now, that apparently may have been in the report. So they want to see that report. Of course, the sheriff said the same thing. He wants to compare the report along with the video, because that in turn will say a whole lot. Because as you've seen in that video, you never saw that young man strike any of those deputies that were out there in that McDonald's parking lot.
And you bring up such a good point, because the officers describe, DeLuca Roll as, you know, approaching them with this aggressive stance and the clenched fists. And it really is not what you see in students' iPhone videos. So at no point do we witness punching an officer. And that also partly led to him spending the night in this juvenile detention center because of this aggravated assault charge that was later dropped.
Do we know anything at all about what was happening prior to the social media video that we've seen, Juan? Have we seen any of the witness testimony statements at all from the deputies about what was happening prior to the recording of the video.
No, and the only thing is what we've heard, and about there being a possible fight there in the parking lot, and apparently there was one apparently the day before. There was supposed to be a fight, so they were out there, and nothing happened. So the deputies had to come back out because, of course, of talk that there was going to be a fight out there. And so when they were out there, but remember, Tom, looking at the video now, DeLuca, you see DeLuca picking up a cell phone from a friend of his that was being arrested or handcuffed at that time. So he's picking up the cell phone, and in turn, when he's picking up the cell phone behind the deputy is when that's when everything just went and spiraled out of control, because then the deputy turns around, and I don't know if he bumped the deputy as he's picking up the cell phone, but the deputy turns around, and then that's when, boom, he pretty much shoves him. You see DeLuca stand up, like almost like, well, what's going on? And then, boom, pepper sprayed right in the face. Right. So, but you have to understand here. You have to understand when people see that and they're like, okay, if you feel threatened as a police officer, as a deputy, okay, well, shouldn't a pepper spray have pretty much diffused that threat?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it continued to spiral from that point on.
One thing I do want to note real quick is, you know, according to school board member Rosalind Osgood, she mentioned yesterday in a press conference with the NAACP that this McDonald's parking lot is a really popular spot for Terra Vella students to come wait for a city bus to go home. So it's not like students aren't here on a really regular basis. But I also just wanted to note, like, exactly what you were saying, Jawan, we don't know if DeLuca was even one of the kids involved in this after-school fight.
We're talking about the viral video of the BSO deputies pepper spraying and taking down a 15-year-old in a parking lot at McDonald's a week ago. It has sparked an internal investigation within Broward County Sheriff's Department. It has brought additional scrutiny to this department that has been under considerable scrutiny, certainly because of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas and some of the deputy behavior then, but even prior to that, including some of the engagement that happened with the shooting at the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport a couple of years ago. Your thoughts on this are welcome at 800-743-9576. That's our voice line, 800-743-9576. Send us a text with your name and where you are texting from to this number, 786-786-7636. 786-786-7636. Katie Swatowski covers Broward County for us here at WLRN. Juwan Strader is along with us now, NBC6 anchor, who spoke with the teenager, his mom, and their attorney. Juwan, what do we know about the rules of engagement when it comes to the sheriff's department in these kinds of situations?
Well, I can't tell you. I don't know their policy. I don't know their policy whatsoever. I could just tell you the history of African Americans and black folks. And as we've seen in the history, me myself being a victim myself as a teenager, being pulled over for no reason and driving while black, walking while black. And so there is a history of behavior. But now with social media, Tom, you have to understand with cameras and everything today, now it doesn't just go with it's your word against mine. Now we get a chance to see the footage, and those out there get a chance to see exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So that's why you're seeing more of this now, because now that there's video and technology, we just saw what happened with Corey Jones, the Palm Beach Gardens officer, Newman Raja, who was sentenced to 25 years concurrently for shooting and killing Corey Jones, who was pulled over on the side of the road. But if it wasn't for the technology picking up exactly what happened that night, he may have walked free.
Yeah, in that case, it was a voicemail, in fact, that that he had left that picked up that shooting.
Well, and to that same point, you know, in speaking to some members from the Black Lives Matter Alliance in Broward County, you're seeing a lot more of it, but you're also still not seeing the full extent of these types of cases in Broward County. I mean, I think folks really want people to know it's not just BSO, it's not just Broward, it's not just since this new sheriff. It's been happening long before, and there's cases that if there's no cell phone video that the Black Lives Matter Alliance in Broward has been looking at for the past 4 years that never get this kind of attention because they're, you know, they're recent, but there's no video to go viral along with it.
viral or not. There's no
evidence. Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. Usually, it's your word against theirs, and of course, if it's my word against a public official or law enforcement official, guess who wins in that argument? But when you have video that backs up what you are saying, then that video goes a long way.
We're talking about the viral video of the Broward County Sheriff's deputies engaging with the 15-year-old, pepper spraying him, slamming him to the pavement in a McDonald's parking lot last week. The deputies have been put on leave as an internal investigation is underway. Prosecutors have dropped any of the charges that had been pending against the 15-year-old. In Key Largo, George is joining us on the telephone. George, go ahead. You're on the radio.
Well, first, let me say that I completely support those officers and their actions. What you fail to note in your left-leaning agenda is the fact that this teenager bent over to pick up a phone, and the officer doesn't know if it's a phone, if it's evidence, or whatnot. That teenager had no place being there in the first place. I know that when I was younger...
So, George, the teenager, just to be clear, number one, there is no left-leaning or right-leaning or any way-leaning agenda, despite what you may think.
Your whole program is left-leaning.
Let me thank you for listening and calling. The teenager, the 15-year-old, had no right to be in the parking lot of the McDonald's. Is that what you're saying?
First of all, you already alluded to the fact that it wasn't the first fight. Every single business.
So I'm sorry. You mentioned the 15-year-old had no right to be there. I'm just trying for clarification, George. What do you mean by that?
Well, let me be clear. I'm 53 years old, and when I was a teenager, I was a bit rambunctious too. And when we gathered for such events, like somebody was going to fight somebody else, the minute that somebody said the cops are being called, everybody left. Why are these teenagers still hanging around? Because it's party time. Everybody wants to be on camera. Everybody has their cell phones out. Now, again, what is this teenager doing so close to another person being arrested and bending over to pick up what is a cell phone, what could not be a cell phone? I don't understand where the cop has to justify his action. The minute that the police arrived, everyone should have left.
All right, George, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for your input and your perspective. George in Key Largo there. How about Rio in Miami on line 5? Rio, let me find you there. There you go, Rio. You should be on the air now. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I don't agree with George and his fear-mongering, but I did want to bring up one point. I think these officers are jumping the gun way too fast with children in particular. I mean, these are children we're talking about. They're not adults. And those kids couldn't await. I mean, the kid that got slammed to the ground, if that cop had punched him a little harder, he would have murdered that little boy for simply walking around a parking lot. I mean, he weighed about as much as the deputy's quadricep. And I just don't think it's fair that they treat, say, children that are out of line or whatnot responding to a fight. What are they really going to see? If they didn't see any guns, they didn't see any weapons, was there absolute necessity to use so much force on a child?
I mean, Rio, it begs the question of the rules of engagement here. As Juwan, as you pointed out, the pepper spray comes out, and then there was the physical altercation with the deputy and the slamming of the 15-year-old's head onto the pavement, and then, of course, the arresting of the 15-year-old here.
And that's true. And you know what? And to your caller, George, who just called in, George, he makes a good point into, hey, he didn't know what he was doing when he picked up that phone and he looked down. But at that point, he pepper sprayed him. So but he first of all, he pushed him and then he pepper sprayed him. So that's two actions. So why did he have to go over and then pick him up and slam him to the pavement? Why did he have to get on top of him? Why did he have to put his head into the pavement? Why did he have to, as you see on that video, punch him on the side of the head? So I totally disagree with George in that respect. In one respect, I agree with him. You don't know what somebody is doing right behind you.
Yeah, he makes a good point, right, Katie, where the teenager bends down and the deputy's back is to the teenager, I believe, or at least not in direct eyesight.
Yes.
And the teenager's reaching out for something. You don't know what. The deputies are in arguably what they may consider as a hostile situation. They are certainly in uniform, but they
certainly
are outnumbered.
Outnumbered.
Exactly. Right. Right.
And so that's part of what we really want to know from the Broward Sheriff's Office is what is this type of protocol when you call for backup and it's 4 people to 200 people? What is, you know, does at that point your training and what you can and cannot do and use change if you're in a situation like that? And a little bit to George's point, the union that represents BSO, mm-hmm. I got to talk to the president earlier this week, and he says they are standing behind the deputies because they don't believe the use of force was out of line. Now, however, the other point they made certainly criticizes training under new Sheriff Tony a little bit, saying that it's too aggressive.
We're going to talk
and we'll get into all that.
We're going to get on all that later on in this program, as a matter of fact. Juwan Strader with NBC 6, what was your sense of DeLuca Roll, the 15-year-old here? He doesn't face charges anymore. You spoke with him and his mother. What were your impressions?
My impression is that he is a scared teenager. He's 15 years old. He was soft-spoken, and I believe he could be going through PTSD at the moment. He was scared. He did not even want to be in that interview with his mother. He is terrified. He just wants to go back to being a teenager. And he says, Mom, and you heard it. You heard it from his mother. We're going to have a full extensive interview of that interview on my Sunday show, Voices, at 9 a.m. But listen, his mother talks about the fact that he just continues to tell her he just wants to go back to being a teen. He doesn't want to talk about it anymore. He wants to stay in his room. Anytime she brings it up, he says, Mom, can you change the story? I don't want to talk about it. You have to understand, a 15-year-old traumatized by what he went through with law enforcement. And so he, in that interview, he said a few words, but Tom, he was terrified. He was scared. I asked him a few other questions. He just stared at me, just looked at me with his blank stare. He is hurting. That's why you haven't seen him on many other programs. You've seen Mom. You've seen the attorney, Ben Crump. He spoke with me, and I believe he had one other interview, and that was it. But they pretty much shut it down. But that's what he's going through right now. Understand, he didn't have any. He doesn't have a record. This is a good kid. No prior arrest wasn't. This is a good kid. So imagine if that was your son. Imagine if that was your child, and going through something like this.
Yeah. Jeff and Davey on line 6. You've got some experience you want to share with us. Go ahead, Jeff. Jeff, you up? He's not quite with us, Jeff's not quite with us yet here. What about the decision, Katie, of the prosecutors to drop charges? What was the rationale that we heard?
Oh, we heard that per the state attorney's investigation, they just didn't see merit. They wanted to drop the charges against a juvenile because he is only 15. They looked at the cell phone video, didn't see this aggravated assault on an officer, and they just kind of said pretty early on, we're not even going to go there. Yeah. That's not what we need to investigate.
Yeah, they made their... Is there a prosecutorial investigation into the deputies' behavior here? So there's an internal investigation on the part of the Broward Sheriff's Office.
Right.
But the state attorney's office is also investigating criminal charges for both deputies.
Jeff and Davey is all set now on line 6. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, hi. Am I online?
Yes, you are, live on the radio. Go ahead.
Nice, nice. So, yeah, so, you know, it's funny. I just wanted to actually just comment on the situation real quick. I don't necessarily agree with the officer's reactions. You know, it's funny because, you know, protocols, trainings, and things are put in place to handle these kind of situations. But, you know, each time we hear that, you know, an officer goes to an excessive standpoint because, you know, they either fear for their life, fear for their safety, and all this crazy stuff. And, you know, I mean, you know, when things so simple happen and we analyze the whole situation and realize there was absolutely no reason for him to be fearing his life, you know, I guess, for example, or even being fear of, you know, being in harm's way, you know, not even just for his life, you know, and then we hear about the reaction, we really have to beg the question, like, realistically, what are these trainings in place? What are the protocols that we keep alluding towards? Because they clearly don't seem to be working, because every single officer seems to just lose their mind in the simplest situations, just lose their cool.
Yeah, know? Jeff, I can only imagine the law enforcement community listening to our program now is reaching for their phones. So let's be sure that we're talking about two deputies with BSO. Certainly there are cases with other law enforcement agencies that have come under scrutiny. Absolutely. But just as one.
We have a lot of good officers out there, a lot of great deputies out there. And I am friends with a lot of them. I work out with a lot of them, including firefighters and rescue. And I want to thank all of them for their service. Unfortunately, there are a few bad apples out there, and that's in any profession. And so I just want to recognize all the service that they give and do in our community.
Yeah. Katie?
Well, and to that point, there being bad apples in any profession, you've got plenty of law enforcement in South Florida that has, you know, going to argue they don't get recognized for when things go right.
Right.
Only when things go wrong.
Amen.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. The video of an arrest happening the right way or intervening in a crime before it's committed, that video rarely goes viral if it exists at all. That's the nature of the beast. Juwan Strader, what else can we look forward to hearing in the conversation with the 15-year-old's mother?
Well, you're going to hear from Mom. You're going to hear her talk about what we kind of discussed here. But unfortunately, I only had about 2 minutes, of course, on airtime when I exclusively ran that interview. Yep. So you're going to hear a lot more from Mom talking about
the
incident. Of course, they're doing everything they can. They're asking for justice. So they are asking that these deputies involved, that they are charged for assault on DeLuca.
But do they plan on pursuing civil charges?
Attorney Ben Crump, I got to speak with him yesterday, and he mentioned they probably will. It's in the plans, but it's not their first priority. They want to see charges happen. They want to see change before they pursue.
Yeah. Let me bring in another caller, Wendy in Sunrise in Broward County. Go ahead, Wendy. You're on the radio.
Hello. I just wanted to comment how there. I used to work there, in that location there.
You worked at the McDonald's
right next,
there?
No, next to the McDonald's.
Okay.
At a bank next to the McDonald's, and there was always fights there when I was working there. At 2 p.m., anytime the school was let out, there were always fights. We made a joke about it, like have your lunch late so you can watch the fights going on outside. Obviously, things got really out of control. That they had to put the sheriff, they had to station the sheriff there every day. And they had to block all the exits and all the entrances with sheriffs to avoid the fight.
So if the fights that you saw were commonplace, was the police presence commonplace as well in your experience, Wendy?
At the beginning it wasn't, and of course it got out of control, and that's when the cops had to start showing up. That's when the police had to start showing up.
And did you witness this incident?
Yes.
What did you see?
Well, no, not that one. The incident we're speaking about, when I did not witness, I do not work there anymore.
Gotcha.
I do not even drive next to the area anymore because it gets crazy. Because of all the fights, and I have two kids, and I don't want to have to worry about that. So
okay.
I don't even,
oh, amen.
There's a Publix there, I don't even go there. During that time, because I want to avoid that.
You change your whole schedule. Wendy
That's
and
right.
Sunrise, thank you for joining us. We appreciate your thoughts and your experiences.
Thanks,
there.
Wednesday. Wendy.
Yeah. Juwan Strader, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and reporting with us here. Juwan Strader with NBC6. It's great to have you on the program.
Absolutely. Tom and Katie, thank you so much and so much for what you do for our community.
Oh, thank you as
Thanks,
well.
Juwan.
Katie, don't go anywhere. We got more to talk about, including the culture at Broward County Sheriff's Office. And changes with Sheriff Israel, of course, under scrutiny, and the new sheriff coming into office, and the interview that you had with the sheriff. That's all ahead as the South Florida Roundup continues after this. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. The Broward Sheriff's Office is under fire again. The agency has been heavily criticized since the Parkland shooting last year and even before, during, and after the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport shooting. Deputies were called out for not acting enough during and after the Stoneman Douglas shooting. Shortly after taking office, Governor Ron DeSantis suspended former Sheriff Scott Israel. Israel lost an appeal this week in the state Supreme Court to get his job back. Current Sheriff Gregory Tony took over the post. He's stressed active shooter training in the agency, but there's been pushback on that move from the union representing BSO deputies, calling Tony's training, quote, aggressive. Here's how Sheriff Tony responded in an interview with WLRN.
There has not been any direct correlation between the training protocols I've put in place and the nature of the deputies involved.
We are talking about the viral video of two deputies being involved with a 15-year-old in Tamarack in a McDonald's parking lot, a viral video where the two deputies have been placed on suspension. As we continue that conversation, you can join us at 800-743-WLRN is the telephone number, 800-743-9576. You could also send us a text at 786-786-7636. Let us know your first name and where you are texting from at 786-786-7636. WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swietlowski is still with us. What did the sheriff have to say regarding the area of focus internally for these particular deputies? And has he made a marked change in training?
So when I talked to him about this last night, what he said is a response to some claims from politicians and the union that represents BSO. Because BSO deputies were so heavily criticized for hiding, during the Parkland massacre, some people are arguing, hey, we've got concerns that this is sort of an overcorrection and that there's some training going on that's overly aggressive. The union in particular is worried about this defense tactics training being more hands-on. And when I talked to the president of the union, he was telling me, look, under Sheriff Israel, the attitude was a hands-off attitude. And it's not that way under the new sheriff. Now, talking to the sheriff, he made it very clear to me last night. He said he has not changed the vast majority, mm-hmm. quote, vast majority of the training, except he's been focusing on active shooter incidents. So he has changed the training when it comes to that, but he has not touched the use of force policy, according to the sheriff.
And this incident that was caught on social media video with the 15-year-old in the McDonald's parking lot was not an active shooter.
No, that is a standard that would go back to a standard use of force policy that the agency has in place.
And so the criticism is that perhaps the overcorrection that the critics have pointed to has begun to bleed over into the behavior of deputies. Well beyond
behavior and well-being of deputies, because the union is saying, you know, we've had injured and severely injured mm-hmm. deputies because of just training. So that's something that the union's already filed a grievance about. But
injuries in training.
Yes.
I see.
And so one thing I also want to point out with the sheriff is, you know, a lot of people that are saying, hey, it's not just BSO. It's not just this one incident in Broward County. It's almost a criticism, of course, of just when you walk into an academy and you sit down and what you're told across the board, not even under the new sheriff, it is already overly aggressive. And there's some criticism that mm-hmm. training in general, before we even get to having to step it up, is not at a good baseline.
And how is the sheriff responding to this criticism? And is there a comprehensive review of training, given certainly the criticism that BSO has been under before the sheriff came into office? Or is he focused, as you've said, on active shooting first, foremost, and only?
He's really focused on active shooter training. That was his biggest focus when he came in yeah. January, basically that, hey, you know, BSO, in my opinion, didn't have a good active shooter training policy. That's really been his focus. I do want to mention real quick that it's not just the Black Lives Matter chapter in Broward that's been meeting with the sheriff. It's the entire Broward Black elected officials who have been meeting with him and bringing concerns.
Well, he was the sheriff made an appearance in front of the Tamarack City Commission, to call that a bit stressful, or some strong words were contentious was a good description. Right. Yeah. Meantime, on the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting, the shooter had some news this week in that he is the beneficiary of a pretty significant life insurance policy. And it is likely to change the representation that he has in the criminal case.
It's a pretty big deal, because a year ago this week, public defenders were assigned to the confess shooter's case. And there were several hearings about whether or not he was indigent, whether or not he had his own money to pay for his own legal representation. They did not know about this life insurance policy. It's an almost $865,000 life insurance policy, likely from when his mother passed away. And he is entitled to half of it. His brother, Zachary, is entitled to the other half. Just the fact of being entitled to an inheritance changes his indigency status. It means that the public defender cannot help him access this money from jail. So whether he can even get it is a first hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't represent him in the case anymore. So they have applied and asked the judge to that they can withdraw. Now, the issue with that is there's also multiple civil lawsuits right. against him as well.
They're making claims against this money.
And so a little over $400,000 actually does not go far in a case involving the death penalty at all.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with a legal expert on capital cases from UM this morning, and he was saying, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. So whomever takes on this case is either going to have to pledge that they're not going to leave when the money runs out,
right.
or the money can still go to recipients in civil court. And it's the criminal judge and the civil judge that are going to have to duke out what happens to this money.
What is the timeline for the resolution on the public defense of the shooter? Is that already been decided that he's no longer going to be able to avail himself of public defenders?
Well, so the criminal judge officially has to accept this.
Has to make a decision.
And she has not
here.
Done that yet.
Right.
But the thought is the public defender's like, we can't do anything now. I was talking
could
with...
Could delay the case.
Oh, no, it will
well.
Definitely delay the case.
Yeah.
I mean, at a very minimum, there's already a year's worth of work on this case, a year's worth of discovery. It's at least several month delay.
Right.
Could be longer.
Yeah.
And there is a scenario where if money runs out and lawyers leave, he could go back to a public defender.
Right. And perhaps more delays in that case as well. Katie Swatowski reporting on all that is happening in Broward County for us at WLRN. Thanks, Katie. Great to
Thanks.
Have you.
Thanks, Tom.
Lots more to come here on the roundup this week. Aritzia, Miami-Dade municipality has banned all single-use plastics. Pretty comprehensive ban here. More on that and the South Florida Roundup next with your calls and texts. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Several South Florida cities have passed bans aimed at protecting the environment. Coral Gables banned styrofoam. Delray Beach banned plastic straws from most businesses. The city of Bell Harbor has gone a step and several steps further. It recently passed an ordinance that would ban all single-use plastics in commercial establishments. This means things like straws and shopping bags cannot be used, sold, or distributed in places like hotels and restaurants. The ban would be enforced beginning in December. Now, the move comes as state lawmakers are considering preemption measures. They would essentially prevent local governments like the Bell Harbor Commission from passing these kinds of bans in the first place. Do you live in a city with a similar ban? Have you seen your plastic straws go away? What about asking for a plastic bag? Do you agree or disagree with any of this? What have you seen on the beach? Has it changed your beach experience? 800-743-WLRN. What about your restaurant experience, for that matter? 800-743-9576, or send us a text at 786-786-7636. Please let us know your first name and where you are texting from at 786-786-7636. Joining us now in studio, Bell Harbor City Manager George Gonzalez and the City Councilman Buzzy Sklar. Buzzy, let me ask you first of all, what led to taking this kind of measure, that it wasn't just straws, it wasn't just styrofoam or plastic bags, that it's this comprehensive 10 different types of single-use plastic, utensils, plates, all of it is included in this prohibition.
That's a great question. A lot of communities tippy-toed into it. I don't want to say it was something that was a token, just getting rid of a straw. It really doesn't move the needle that much. If we were going to do it, we really wanted to do it, and had great support from George and the rest of the council members, and we wanted to be an all-encompassing ordinance. You know, if you're going to do something, you have to do it right. And I think that's what we did, is we really went all in, and with great support from the community and from my fellow council members, we were able to move the needle on this.
George, it could be considered a pretty comprehensive ban of plastic use in Bell Harbor.
Absolutely. We think it's actually one of the most comprehensive in the state. And as the councilman mentioned, there really isn't a difference between a plastic knife and a plastic straw and a plastic bag. It all ends up causing harm to the environment. And so rather than picking one or the other and winners and losers, we said, let's do all of it. If we're going to do it, let's do it right. As the councilman proposed it, and then his colleagues on the commission or the council really wholly embraced it and said, this is really the right thing to do.
What's this going to change for the city itself?
It's going to keep our beaches clean. And I think that's one of the most important things. We have two beautiful 5-star hotels, mm-hmm. you know, on our beach. And if, you know, they could keep plastics out of the hands of the guests at those hotels, it's going to keep Bell Harbor Shops, which is probably the number one luxury mall in the world, mm-hmm. You know, making sure that they're, you know, they're on board with us also, which they are. You know, it's really going to, you know, help us out. And more than anything, it sets a precedent for other communities to follow.
It sets a precedent, but also sets up some potential friction with the state legislature as it considers these preemption measures as well. We'll talk about that in a moment. Nikolai Ersin is along with us. You talked about some of the 5-star hotels that make Bell Harbor home. Nikolai is with the St. Regis Hotel Marriott. He's with us on the telephone. Nikolai, how does this single-use plastic ban affect business at the St. Regis?
You know, the effects are going to be minimal. We've already been working and moving in this direction to reduce and minimize the amount of single-use plastics that we do. So we've already looked at alternatives and have alternatives in place using bamboo plates and bamboo serving utensils when it needs to be disposable. And in the pool and beach area, we've already invested in high-quality plastics that can be washed and reused.
So you've already taken these measures at the St. Regis, is that right? Do you consider yourself in...
We've already started the process, led by, you know, our company is moving in this direction. So we really commend the Village Council for doing this, and I think it's a great a leadership role for Bell Harbor to really push this.
So, Nikolai, I mean, is the St. Regis in compliance with this legislation in Bell Harbor?
Not 100% yet. I think we have until December. Phasing out water bottles, single-use water bottles, will be one that we're going to tackle and go to our vendors and really press them to come up with these alternatives. But like I mentioned, a lot of the things were already in the process, and we've already eliminated a number of them.
Admittedly, I have not stayed at a St. Regis, but are there plastic cups, for instance, at a hotel that are commonplace in many other hotels at a St. Regis?
There are plastic, but as I mentioned, it's plastic that is of a high quality that can be washed. All of the glassware in the rooms, we don't have plastic in the rooms like that. Hmm. It's all glassware. So really out by the pool and beach is where you would find the most plastic, and we've invested in the high-quality plastics that can be washed and reused. So it's not the disposable.
George and Buzzy, the St. Regis and its customers notwithstanding, what about the cost of business for Bell Harbor restaurants and stores?
Let me say something.
George, go ahead.
And just going back to a question you asked earlier as well, this ordinance will apply to the Village as well, and the Village does promote events and activities mm-hmm. in our parks, on our beaches, and so we would be abiding by the same regulations that our private businesses would have. Mm-hmm. But when the councilman presented this, he was sensitive to the impact on business, and that's why you have this long lead time. It's also an opportunity for businesses to exhaust their supplies of plastics, and as they're making their orders for the new year, mm-hmm. they can order sensitive materials that are more in compliance with our code. October 1 is when we'll start to issue warnings. December 1 is when penalties will kick in.
What's a penalty? What's a ticket cost?
$250 per incident.
Mm-hmm. So if the St. Regis or a store has a 24-pack of plastic bottles, is each of those bottles in violation?
No, that would be
a single violation for a case.
Yeah, the idea here is not to make money. The idea is to get compliance.
Understood. Buzzy, go ahead.
Just to really dig down on your question, I come from the restaurant and hospitality business. I had restaurants on Miami Beach, and I actually converted my restaurants 2 years ago to paper takeout bags mm-hmm. and paper straws, and we went to the green plastic cups.
Additional cost to the consumers,
profits? You want to know something? It's not that bad. It really didn't.
There was a cost to it.
A very, very minimal cost. Okay. So, you know, when I propose this, it's something that I actually put my money where my mouth is on this. It's not something that, you know, I was just out there hugging trees. You know, it's something that I was actually on the forefront of as a restaurateur myself.
Talking about the plastic ban that's been approved in Bell Harbor of 10 different plastic items, cups and forks, straws, bags. David in Boynton Beach has given us a call. Go ahead, David. You're on the radio. David, you with us? David's in blue. Go ahead, David. Now we can hear you. Go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead. Loud and clear. Sorry about that. You're on the radio.
Okay. I can't speak to what's happening in Bal Harbour. I live in Palm Beach County. I know there's a push to do the same thing. But I think the plastic straws and the plastic cups, I think it's really like a kiss on the cheek. If they really wanted to attempt to do something, they would force restaurants to and bars to recycle their glass bottles, their aluminum cans. That you know, if I go to a bar and I sit there and you hear them all clang into the garbage, mm-hmm. and they get thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's more invasive to the environment than plastic, you know, spoons and forks.
Let me put that to Buzzy, the councilman. Go ahead.
That's actually a great point. We actually have, for all the condominiums we have in our area and in the private homes, we have a very forward recycling program.
What about for the...
And education.
And for the restaurants, for the hotels?
Yep.
Yeah. All included in that.
Yeah, most hotels generally either have full recycling programs or they have post-collection separation.
Nikolai, what about the St. Regis and recycling of the champagne bottles, I imagine, that your customers are using,
yeah.
if I may stereotype, for the St. Regis?
Absolutely. We definitely recycle. We even have recycling canisters in each room, so the guests are able to recycle themselves.
Yeah. The other challenge here is that you need to take steps as you go. Because of the issue with the state and the states looking at preempting local yeah. governments like this, we want to make sure that we kind of can do what we want to do and get it done properly.
We have a text from 786. I salute the leadership of the Bal Harbour Village Council. This is the sort of leadership we need nationwide and globally. The texter goes on to say, shame on Florida state leadership for trying to pass a preemptive bill to prevent responsible environmental stewardship. Legislation is being debated in Tallahassee in this final week of the legislative session that would preempt Bal Harbour or any other community from taking this kind of action. Buzzy, if that should pass and if the governor should sign it, what's the fate of this kind of plastic ban for Bal Harbour?
I actually spent 2 weeks ago in Tallahassee. We want to be very proactive in this. I met with our senators and our reps and just to see where everything was. The nice thing is the Senate basically threw out their straws out of their proposed bill. There's still something floating around in the House, but a lot of times without a Senate component, mm-hmm. you know, to marry up with it, mm-hmm. they hopefully go away. So the nice thing is the way that we have our ordinance written, let's say for some reason they say your straws are banned. We have the ability of just
separating that piece out.
Yeah. Pulling that piece out of our ordinance and still moving forward with all of the other plastics within there.
So, for instance, if the state legislature says communities cannot ban plastic straws, you would still go forward with banning plastic utensils and plastic bags.
Yes, exactly.
And everything else.
That's the way the ordinance is written, that if we had to, because of state preemption, we can pull individual units out of the ordinance.
John in North Miami on line 5. Go ahead, John. You're on the radio.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I paddleboard right there by Bal Harbour, and the plastics that you see from the perspective of a paddleboarder is unbelievable. I've been in that water for the last 40 years, and how it's accumulated in the last 20, it's exponential. And the simple fact that we talk about the expense, the short term, isn't anything what's going to cost the state in the long term if we don't do something about it, because our beaches are our number one industry here, and it's going to affect them like it does in parts of Asia, where you see miles of garbage.
Yeah. John, we appreciate it. Thanks for the perspective from on the water, looking at the world from a paddleboard there. George, what about the condition of the beaches in Bal Harbour? I mean, has there been empirical data about plastics in the water that led to this discussion at all?
Technically, no, not in our waters. Our beaches are pretty well maintained. We struggle with seaweed from time to time. Mm-hmm. And dealing with the sand and the widths of our beaches. So it's not that litter is getting into the ocean in Bal Harbour per se. But again, as the councilman mentioned, you know, what we hope is that if we took this first step and other coastal cities may do the same, pretty soon, you know, the step of you know, 1,000 miles starts with the first step.
Yeah.
This is something that we hope gets replicated elsewhere. And while our beachfront isn't affected the same way, we still felt it important to do.
Nikolai Erson with the St. Regis in Bal Harbour. Are guests asking about this? Do you anticipate guests to ask about this? To George's point about kind of exporting this idea about a plastic ban, you see guests from all over the world at the St. Regis. Do you anticipate questions, even concerns for that matter, from guests about why they can't buy a plastic water bottle?
We do get questions, and I think once this ban is in place, it's really just about educating about the alternatives that are available and that we offer. We do, from a group perspective, when groups are coming to host events or conferences at the hotel, they're much more aware of their footprint and in the trash that they're accumulating. So they're very curious about what our sustainability efforts are and what practices we have in place already to address things like this.
Buzzy, what's the next step in this? I mean, we talked about the timeline for implementation here and enforcement, of course, but are you looking at the potential of further expanding this kind of plastic prohibition?
Well, there are other things that could be grouped into it. Water bottles, which I love that the St. Regis is being proactive on. Basically 40% of all plastics found in the ocean are single-use plastics. So that's big. So anything that we can do to really expand it, we're going to try and do down the road.
Well, Buzzy, we appreciate you coming in today. Thanks for sharing this new ordinance, this plastic ban in Bell Harbor.
Thank you for having
me. Buzzy Sklar is a city councilman in Bell Harbor. George Gonzalez is the city manager in Bell Harbor. George, nice to see you. Thanks for coming in studio. And Nick Lyerson is with the St. Regis Hotel Marriott in Bell Harbor as well, one of the most comprehensive and widespread plastic bans so far that has been passed in the state of Florida by a Florida city. Finally on the roundup this week, celebrating where we live in poetry. All this month, we've teamed up with the O Miami Poetry Festival and asked you to write an ode to your zip code. We call them zip odes. We received over 2,000 poems. And Wednesday night, WLRN's Sammy Mack hosted a celebration of zip odes at Vizcaya in Miami. Among those sharing their zip odes were several young poets.
Hello, I'm Genoa, and I'll be reading a poem, and I'm in third grade. 33150. I am Genoa. It is hot, cold, and my garden is fresh, juicy.
My name is Samaya Windham, and this is my poem. Dans ma route, il y a jardin, beaucoup de voitures, mais pas de piscine, la voisine sourit toujours. This poem is in French, so it means, in my street, there are gardens, lots of cars, but no pools. My neighbor smiles always.
Hi, my name is Stanislacy, and my zip code is 33138, and this is my poem. Gagne un pile papillon, gagne pied ma godeya, gagne accident machine, voisine la toujours appelé na téléphone li. There's a lot of butterflies, there's a mango tree outside, there's car accidents, the neighbor is always yelling on his phone.
Hi, my name is Sia Patel, I'm in the fifth grade, and my zip code is 3313, and my poem is, in my motel there are lots of people, do I live with them, do they live with me?
My name's Americo, and I just wrote a poem about where I live. I live in Liberty City in a medium-sized red house, and yeah, it just got brought up by my teacher, and I was like, oh, a poem. I was right about it. I didn't expect to get up here. It's a lot of people.
And one more time, you were actually reading your poem as you were saying it, right?
Yeah.
Yes. That was not a preamble. That was the poem.
Yeah.
So, one more time, can you read it for us?
I live in a Liberty City with a nice medium-sized red painted house. And my zip code's 33142. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Isabel, and my zip code is 33146. There's a little backstory. Last year, I was chosen as a finalist for this event, and it really sort of changed my life, especially here in Miami. In the fall of 2017, I moved here, and I didn't really like it. And then in March, one of my teachers told me about this event, and she had my whole class submit like 5 of them so that one of us would win, because the odds were better. And mine was chosen, and I got to come here and be a part of this amazing event, and some of my teachers came out to support me. And it was when I really started to feel like I had opportunities here that I never would have had anywhere else. And so this year, when the event came around, I knew I had to try again, and I had to reflect on my experience. So here it goes. An unfamiliar home, a year of pain, a night at Vizcaya, and now I feel good again. Thank you.
Thanks again to all of you who wrote, read, and listened to all those Zippodes this year. That'll do it for the South Florida Roundup this week. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontato is our digital director. Our news director at WLRN is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio operations is Peter J. Meritz. WLRN's director of radio programming and our technical supervisor is Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening, calling, texting, and supporting WLRN.